If you are in a position right now where you are feeling like you're not getting enough of the big stuff done, it's probably because you're prioritizing the stuff that you find easiest, or you're telling yourself it's the most important, like coaching your clients at the beginning of the day versus just putting it at the end of the day, because it's actually the easiest thing for you to do. Otherwise, you wouldn't have built a business around it.
There are three things that are consistent in the world, and that's death, taxes, and your ads stopping working. We see this a lot in successful people. Have a winning ad and then it stops working, and then they honestly themselves and they're like, how do I get my ads working again?
What's the biggest mistake you see when ads stop working?
Welcome to the Successful Podcast. Today we have a Q&A episode, which is an absolute banger. You guys are going to get tons of value out of it. Steph, how are you feeling today?
Yeah, it is always nice to answer listener questions, answer community questions. So I'm excited to dive in. What are we talking about today?
We're on some squeaky-ass fucking chairs. I'm going to have to be really, like, still today. We're talking about time and energy management for multi-business owners, how to fix lead flow when ads slow down, what to do, fixing your niche, sharpening your message, building a team you can trust, and regaining consistency and motivation. If you guys are new around here, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. We really appreciate that. Steph, do you want to kick yourself with your personal update?
I would love to kick us off with a personal update. So I've done a lot of self-work. We both have actually done a lot of self-work, a lot of personal development. And, you know, growing up, I was probably quite a frustrated, angry person. My dad was quite an angry man. And so over the years of doing all this personal development, I've really let go of a lot of things. And so when things come up and they trigger me, it's very much a case of love and light and move forward and, you know, don't engage or don't interact with it. But recently I had something happen and I felt disrespected. And instead of doing the love and light thing, I let myself get angry. And I didn't do anything to the person. I let that be, but
no physical violence.
No physical violence. No, no death. But I did let it fuel me. I did let that frustration, that anger, that let me prove you wrong, that you underestimated me, I let it fuel me for probably the last 8 weeks. And it has felt really good. And what I mean by really good is, like, I'm not angry, but it's like sometimes, guys, sometimes you need something to push you. Sometimes you need an enemy to conquer. Sometimes you need somebody who pushes you outside of your comfort zone, makes you want to be better, like makes you want to show the world what you're made of. And I think when you tap into that energy, it's a lot more powerful than, like, oh, it would be nice to grow. It's a lot more powerful than desire-based energy. And so I've kind of tapped into a bit of dark energy. So to the people who may or may not have made me angry, I thank you. Thank you for the gift of my dark energy.
And we appreciate that as well. It's great for business. My personal update is we sometimes get clients from people that have previous business coaches. Usually when they tell them they're leaving to come to Success School, sometimes the business coaches are angry and they say some shit. I got called a bro marketer by another business coach, which is, I don't know if that's a rip or a compliment. I'm kind of seeing it as like a bit of a compliment. Like, bro marketer, aka does heaps of shit and makes heaps of money. Mm. Like, that's what I'm thinking there.
Totally.
And I just thought to myself, that's weird. Like, if people do, they leave to other coaching programs. I'm never like saying bad shit about people's coaching programs.
No.
It's a weird, like, pathetic thing to do.
It's a,
like,
really,
when people do that.
Yeah. It's they were using bro marketer in the way of, like, it being negative, but we're like, well, you just do the amount of marketing that you need to do in order to get the result in the time frame that you want. Like, yeah, that's all it is. And, like, we have big goals. Yeah. So we do a lot of marketing, and that represents this speed and direction that we're going to our goals. But if you're trying to get from $5,000 a month to $10,000 a month, then yeah, you don't need to do as much marketing as we do trying to get to $1 million a month, of course. Yeah. So they tried to say it like it was a bad thing. Anyway, the client joined anyway, which is such a lol.
It's hilarious.
And
kind of thought, like, that's the, like, really, like, the bro marketer mindset is really what you have to have, if that's what they're referring to, if you want to fucking create something big.
Yes.
Like, yeah, if you want to stay at like 10K months or something like that, then you could probably just coast through and do some organic and do fuck all.
Yeah.
But, like, if you're pushing for big stuff, like you said before, there is a level of, like, you're going to have to really, like, ramp shit up, which I thought was pretty funny.
Pretty funny. So, guys, no matter what you do, you're going to get judged, and other people are going to try and take you down online, so don't worry about it. Let's get into our Q&A, Tim.
So, question number one from Amber W. How do I manage my time better when I'm running two businesses and starting to feel burnt out? Steph, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, burnout is not usually from doing too much. It's from not really having a clear focus plan. Like typically when you are looking at someone who's running two businesses, like if you're running two, you should have one that is like so systemized and set up and basically runs without you, and then add a second one in at that point. If you're still having to like baby both businesses, you really shouldn't have two businesses. Or you can, but just be prepared for an extreme amount of work and therefore no rest and therefore burnout over time. And so typically when we look at somebody who's wanting to move into a second business, the first business just has to be systemized first. In Amber's case, what's the first role that you would delegate if you were getting dragged under, burnt out, stuck in the weeds?
Yeah, I find most people in this situation, if they're getting burnt out by things in their business, usually they're just focusing on the wrong things. And I know we've given this advice hundreds of times, but most people just aren't outsourcing the VA or the admin-y type tasks in their business. Therefore, they just get drowned out in it. Just a story on this, like we recently just hired a new VA, second VA in our company, and he's been a fucking legend. Mm. Like he's been super epic, super high quality, super valuable, super like attentive. Everything's great. And he's just doing a lot of stuff that are like lesser valuable hourly tasks that I just don't want to do. And essentially it's can be a little bit of a waste of time because they're not like big needle moving things. So I think like people just really just need to cut admin stuff from their calendars and really just focus on the things that are moving the needles. Steph, how do you decide what gets your best hours of the day specifically?
Yeah. So I think that we can all get guilty of just doing what's easy first. And there's that saying around eat the frog. And I think that if you are going to go into your workday, you should just do the hardest thing first because your brain is going to have the most energy at the beginning of the day versus at the end of the day when you've made 100 decisions. So typically at the beginning of the day, you and I both calendar block project work as early as possible. And we'll typically tick off the hardest things first. And we'll leave things like coaching or delivery, emails, team meetings, any kind of meetings to the later half of the day because those things don't require so much brain power from us. So if you are in a position right now where you are feeling like you're not getting enough of the big stuff done, it's probably because you're prioritizing the stuff that you find easiest or you're telling yourself is the most important, like coaching your clients at the beginning of the day versus just putting it at the end of the day because it's actually the easiest thing for you to do. Otherwise, you wouldn't have built a business around it. So question two is from Josh D. He has said, what's the best way to get more consistent, high quality leads when my ads have stopped working?
Yeah. So essentially ads work in a life cycle of the same with, you know, everything in the universe. There is like a birth process. There is a growth process. There is a life. And then there is a death. You know, there are three things that are consistent in the world and that's death, taxes, and your ads stopping working. So you really need to like prepare for that to come. A lot of people are just underprepared for it to come. So they'll like sometimes randomly just get an ad that works. And we see this a lot in successful people have a winning ad and then it stops working. And then they honestly shit themselves and they're like, how do I get my ads working again? I mean, most of the time people just don't start off with enough creatives. With the new Andromeda update, what has happened is it's very creative dominant. So you need a ton of creatives going into it. So the best way to get consistent high quality leads when your ads have stopped working is to make a ton of creatives when you start. Minimum of 10, maximum of 50, somewhere between there will be great. You just want to cycle through. No, you don't have to run 50 ads at once, but you need a lot.
So if you need a lot of creatives, how often should you test new creatives?
So testing new creatives, the process that like all the bigger agencies use is they get their clients to send them creatives every week most of the time if they can't create it themselves. So every week you should be testing at least 5 to 6 different creatives and then finding the winners and scaling those out. But you have about a 10% chance of finding a winning creative. So the odds are pretty low. So you need to do a bunch. Steph, if someone has a list and they want to reactivate dead leads, what would you do to reactivate dead leads?
The first step when you want to reactivate a dead lead is to send an email directly to those people. So I would segment out your list. I would segment people who haven't been active on your list in, say, 6 months. And I would send them kind of an email that says something along the lines of, hey, you know, you haven't been opening my emails, but if you don't want to be on this list anymore, just let me know. We can remove you or you feel free to unsubscribe. But if you do want to stay on this list, there's tons of freebies and good value in here. So here's a freebie attached for you. So something that's going to basically be a give at the same time as letting them know that, hey, if you no longer want to be here, like we're probably going to unsubscribe you. Like we're really big on email list cleanup. Over the years, we've had probably 30,000 people through our email list, but we cut ours down all the time because we want to make sure that only the most active and high quality people are coming through to Successful, to the Container. And so we just make sure we're cleaning our list up really regularly. We also send text blasts. So if you wanted to reactivate a dead lead, you could probably send a text blast as well and just say, hey, I've just sent you a quick email. Let me know if you still want to receive my emails, you know, and then they can opt out that way as well. So something like that just to reactivate it. You'd actually be really surprised how quickly it reactivates for them.
For sure.
When it comes to ads, obviously we coach a lot of people inside Success School. What's the biggest mistake you see when ads stop working?
Yeah, the biggest mistake I see when ads stop working is people switch ads off and they just turn campaigns off completely and then they try to change it up. Usually it's just from ad fatigue, and the way that you overcome ad fatigue is you can duplicate the campaign and rerun the same campaign over again. Sometimes that works, and then other times you just need to launch a new creative. So if you have a winner or you have a funnel that works, you don't really never want to switch it off. You always just want to be testing new creatives every time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, question three is from Sharon. How do I figure out my niche and make sure my message actually connects with the right people?
Okay, so the first part of this is figuring out your niche. And honestly, no one can tell you how to figure out your own niche. Like, you have to choose it. When we look at niche, we really look at ideal client. Like, we don't typically look at niche as a very specific thing because niches can still feel quite broad. I like to speak to one type of person when I'm creating content and when I'm creating offers. I want to make sure it solves a problem for one very, very, very clear subset of people. So I don't believe that people should be going for, you know, women between 30 and 50. I think that you should focus on women who are 30 to 40 or 30 to 35 and focus on the problems that happen for women in that age range rather than a much bigger one, because otherwise your messaging gets very vague and then people don't typically connect with it, come through your lead magnets. It's very hard to create pain point based content. And so the first step is to figure out your niche. Again, I can't figure it out for you, but make sure it's, think about one person that you would love to work with and the problems that they'd be experiencing. And that's what I'd focus my niche on. When it comes to getting a really clear message, Tim, do you want to talk us through how to create clear messaging once you know who your exact ideal client is?
Yeah. So how you create clear messaging is you really want to understand their problems, their pain points, the solutions that your product gives them. And then once you have those, it's really easy to create marketing copy around that. I think a lot of people miss this step. But if I said to you, Steph, like, hey, what are your audience's problems? Most people give you like super surface level answers. And if you have a surface level problem or a surface level issue that your avatar has or your ideal client, the marketing will really fall flat. So it has to be very specific. Let's give some examples of this. So my problem right now, or let's say like I hypothetically was running some kind of like coaching business, is you're spending a lot of money on ads, but the return or the ROAS is not where it needs to be. That's mm-hmm. a very specific problem, rather than, oh, you're just not getting enough leads. You see, like there's just a specificity angle on that. Hey, Steph, what's the easiest way to define a niche without boxing yourself in?
I mean, I don't think you can box yourself in as long as you have a big enough addressable market, right? Like there are people, and like we have people in our program who specifically work with like mortgage brokers wanting to like, they're very, very, very niche niches, but you don't need a million clients. So if you're selling something that's high ticket and has a fairly big total addressable market, then, and so do some research. Like I literally asked one of our clients who's a mortgage broking coach, and I said to her, how big is your addressable market? She knew exactly how many mortgage brokers were in Australia. So we know exactly how many people we're working with. I've spoken before to someone who's a business coach for acupuncturists. The total addressable market was really, really small, but because she was selling high ticket, it didn't matter so much because she didn't need millions of people to buy our product. Every day new acupuncturists are getting qualified. So it was fine. But the thing is that, yeah, when you're really wanting to niche without boxing yourself in, you've just got to look at how many people are there that are available to buy my product. How do you spot when your niche has evolved or needs to pivot?
Yeah, I'll hit this with a story. So we actually heard a story of a story. I forget the guy's name. He's like the hedgehog looking dude. Does AI copywriting?
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, we did. We watched a presentation from him. Anyway, this guy was doing like 200K a month and then he went to $1 million a month. And the only thing he changed, he was put AI in his process. So he had a copywriting course for people to make money. So it's like a general, like get out of your 9 to 5 with copywriting type thing. And it was doing okay and all doing well. 200K a month is doing well. But he added AI to it. So like putting the AI angle instead of fighting AI. And he went up to $1 million a month. Why I'm telling you that is because he adapted what he does and he evolved his product. And I think there is a natural evolution that everyone needs every 18 to 24 months where they should be thinking about adding or evolving their product. At Success School, honestly, we do it like monthly at this stage. Like we're always adding new stuff. We're always integrating and always improving and changing and tweaking. But I think you need to have an eye on the future and what the trends are. the AI trend is, it's been pretty interesting. I'm just going to look broadly on AI here. It hasn't displaced as many jobs as I thought it would at this stage. It's more like it's been a tool for a lot of people. I thought most virtual assistants would be like fucked by now and like out of work, but it seems to have just sped up productivity for a lot of people, and the models are just getting better.
Yeah. And I would say that, like, and we've personally noticed, and I mean, feel free to, you know, come slap us, ChatGPT, but like, we have personally noticed that actually we thought it was going to be getting better and better and better, but ChatGPT specifically has gotten worse and worse and worse. It's, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but it's getting lazy. Like, you'd be like, write me this, and it just tries not to write it over and over and over again. Just asks you tons of questions to try and like distract you from it, and then doesn't do it right anyway. It's very, very frustrating. But there are a lot of AI learning.
I thought it was just me. It was asking me like to reaffirm the task like five times.
So
I was like,
many times.
I was like, do the fucking task.
Yeah, yeah. And so we're definitely seeing more AI as a tool rather than a
like, it's got a replacement.
Totally.
It's too lazy.
Totally.
All right, moving into question four. This is from Jody D. How do I build a team I can trust so I'm not holding everything together all the time? This is great. We've just gone through a lot of this.
We have gone through a lot of this. I think that when you first hire a team member, you need to be really upfront. So the first thing here is, like, when you interview someone for a role in your company, my piece of advice would be to share the warts and all version. So don't go in there being like, this is going to be the most amazing job, the most amazing company. Like, really, be super honest. I'm like, Tim and I, we're notoriously disorganized. We oftentimes leave things too close to the last minute and the team will have to pull together. So we're really clear about that in our hiring process. And that's not to say that we're not working on it, like we are actively working on it, but it's also just part of like the way that we operate. There's a lot of change in our company because we always move the goalposts. And so if you're coming into our company, you better be somebody who's comfortable with change and you better like to work and use your initiative. And so we're really upfront about those things at the very beginning of our hiring process. And what that allows us to do is make sure that the people who come in really want to be there and haven't been sold some sort of dream. So first and foremost, be clear at the front. Second, make sure that it's really clear what their role is and that there are KPIs and that there's structure to their position. So they know, like, if you're hiring a VA in your company, they should know what tasks are due on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays. They should know what's recurring and what's ad hoc. You should be able to make that really clear for them. They shouldn't have to be confused about what they need to be doing. So, like, first and foremost, those are the first things that need to happen. What have I missed?
That's it. Nailed it.
You've recently brought on potentially one of our best hires.
Yep.
Kind of accidentally, almost, just like needed a body and brought it into the business. Talk to me about how you hire A players. How do you spot them? How do you know?
So I'm going to give a really long-winded story here. And it's about essentially the three types of horses. So you've got stallions, you've got workhorses, and then you've got donkeys. And I like to relate them to A, Bs, and C players. A donkey is something that you have to whip to get to do stuff. And if you have a team member right now and you're listening to this and you have to constantly remind them, you have to constantly tell them off, you have to constantly, like, essentially just coach them through every task or step that they do, you've got a donkey. And then you've got a B player, and these are workhorses, and they'll just get it done. It won't be anything exceptional, won't be anything out of the ordinary, but it'll just consistently get done. Usually you don't have too many dramas with a workhorse, they'll just keep going. And then you've got stallions, and stallions usually go above and beyond. They will get things done. They'll use their initiative. They will work harder. They'll work later. They'll push towards a goalpost. But stallions are obviously a lot rarer than workhorses and donkeys. But the problem with hiring stallions is they're very hard to find, and usually they have positions. There are not too many rogue stallions roaming around out there that are up for hiring. How do you spot one? For me, it's a personality trait and past success. That's what I look for. It's like, do they have that like dog in them? Do they want to be an intrapreneur? So working in someone else's business, moving towards a common goal, and then have they had past success in the things we're doing? We've recently hired some client success people, and some client success people have had successful businesses in the past, which is like a non-negotiable for us. Like, you don't want to be taking business advice from someone that hasn't had business success. So really, for me, it's past performance. It's a willingness to learn. It's a willingness to grow. It's a willingness to like use their initiative. And it's just like essentially like they've got proven reps in what they're doing.
Totally.
Hey, Steph, what's one system that instantly made life easier in our team?
We have Broscaled in the past, right?
Yeah.
Especially me. So I've specifically had Broscaled. My last coaching program, Broscaled to the Moon. And so we had all of the bells and whistles. Like, we had the big expensive CRMs, and we had the fancy project management systems, and we had all the, you know, special comms apps and all this stuff. And then we got rid of it all because it was just basically you, me, and our admin side. Yeah. And we started again. So recently we got the team, because obviously we've been growing recently. Recently we got the team back onto ClickUp.
Yeah.
And it's been awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how awesome it's been for the team, but do you know who it's been awesome for? Me, yeah. I have loved it. Dude, I used to do all of my like to-dos on my notes app. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome, except that I also put literally every other thought I ever have in my notes app. And so
stream
it's
of
like
consciousness.
Yeah, stream of consciousness in my notes app. If anyone ever hacks my phone, they're gonna be like, this chick is crazy. And so having ClickUp, like literally at night we'll be on the couch and I'll be like, just open up my phone real quick and just brain dump everything that's popping up into ClickUp and setting the task as a reminder for myself for the next day or for the next week or whenever it's due. And it has just been so cathartic to know that it's there and I'm going to get a reminder every day that I log in to see what is due and what's coming up. Oh my God, game changer. And I'm sure it has been for our team as well.
For sure.
When it comes to keeping a good team happy, how do you balance giving them freedom, but also making sure that they meet the performance standards?
Yeah, we run a pretty unorthodox team. So we don't have like set hours for our team at all. It's all outcomes. So we don't have like 40 hours a week type deal. Like we give them a per client amount and like a retainer for most of our team. That means if they get it done with high standards, they can take as long as they take for each task, which is great for time and great for money and great for everyone else. And that type of setup, you do attract typically like better quality people because a lot of people obviously want to earn good money and work less. So I think this really started working out really well for us when we said solutions, not problems.
Mm.
So we had a team meeting a while back and we said, hey guys, there's a lot of problems coming up all the time, you know, like in Slack and WhatsApp and wherever, but like, you know, we're not out here to solve every problem that you have. Like if you have a problem, come to us with solutions and then the team would come to us with solutions and then we would approve them, yes or no. And it's just really, it's probably taken, you know, it's a long-winded way to answer this question, but it's really like lifted the standards of the team because people are trying to solve their own problems rather than just kind of falling back on us.
Mm. And the more that they bring the solutions to us and the more that we approve those solutions, the faster their learning cycle is on finding the right solution so that they don't have to spend so much time finding solutions to present to us to get approved, right? So because we haven't set our team up to work 40-hour weeks, they're not fucking around for 40 hours, you know? Yeah. They're not like, oh, I can take my time with this. Like they just want to get it done as fast as possible so they can switch off and go and live their life, which is obviously the way that we also work. Like you and I will get as much work done in the morning as we can so we can switch off in the afternoons. And so we've got this kind of like lifestyle team that's optimized for solving problems and finding solutions as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. The standards are the standards. Like, and we just, I think when it comes to keeping standards high, just to help answer this question, it's like you have to set them and then you have to hold them. So when something's below standard, you need to call them on it. Like that's the only way that a standard is enforced.
Yep. All right. Final question today. Question 5, Tara C. How do I stay motivated and keep consistent when business feels slower or I'm losing motivation?
If business is slow and you're losing motivation, then you need to take more action. It's as simple as that. You can't always be instantly rewarded for the work that you do. You can't always need to have somebody validating the work that you're doing. There are nothing good in life, whether it's abs, whether it's Ferraris, whether it's Chanel handbags, the big dream beach house that you're dreaming of. Nothing good in life comes from getting validated instantly. So you have to put in the work. You're going to have to put in the reps consistently, even when no one's watching, even at 5 a.m. when you're going to the gym, even when you've got no one there to cheer for you or no one there is there shouting at you to get the reps done. You have to do the reps. If you say that you want abs, you have to put in the work even when no one's watching. And so if you're not feeling motivated, well, that's where discipline comes in because you need to be disciplined in order to get the work done. Tim and I do not feel motivated.
Almost ever.
Like we feel motivated probably, I would say like 1 week out of every 8. We're like super excited and lit up and then start a heap of projects and then grind on those projects for the next 7 weeks and then have a win, feel motivated, grind on a project for 12 weeks before we have the next win. And if you're relying on the wins to give you the motivation, you are going to see really inconsistent income cycles. You're going to get burnt out really fast because you're going to put a lot of emotion into, oh my God, this is not working and therefore I'm failing and la, 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 and it's just exhausting. And so you simply can't rely on it.
Yeah, I'm going to just say this bluntly. Like if you're looking for motivation to be successful or run a business, you're probably not going to last in business. Like that's the unfortunate truth of it. Honestly, the last couple of months has been an absolute grind for us, like getting kicked in the face every day. It's like last thing I want to do is get up and make content and coach and run ads and do all that type of shit. But like that's the reality of this stuff. And like the sooner someone tells you that, like obviously the better it's going to be for you because you might stop wasting your time here. But
I was having a conversation the other day with somebody who knows us very well. And she was saying that she's never met anybody like us that just loves the game of business, you know, and she's worked with a lot of business owners and met a lot of people. And she was like, you guys just love the game. You don't have to love the game of business, but you do have to love the game of the thing that you do at the very least. And you have to love the game of like nutrition. But really, like to get to 30, 40, 50K months, you just have to be passionate about what you do and you have to be willing to be disciplined to do the work, right? Yeah. But if you want to scale up past like 100K months, $200,000 months, $300,000, like anything beyond that, you need to love the game of business. Yeah. Like you got to love the challenge and you got to love the suck because
you do it without reward.
You got to do it without reward. And then the reward is so much tastier because you worked so much harder for it. And so like, therefore it's worth it, right?
100%. Steph, what do you do when you just don't feel like showing up? Like what's the mindset you need to adopt?
I was watching a video from Shelby Sapp a couple of weeks ago. And she was like, I don't miss. I post 3 videos a day, every single day for the last 3 years. I don't miss. So when people are like, oh my God, she just blew up overnight. Like, no, she didn't. She put in the reps. And I think that when I see other people committing to their craft like that, it reminds me that if they can do it, I can do it too. And that any story that I'm telling myself about I'm tired or I'm exhausted or whatever is just a story. And it's not that I'm going to push myself to exhaustion. Like if you need a rest, rest, but rest with intention. Don't rest and then be on your phone and then be thinking about work and then be, you know, reading business books. Like when you're resting, rest. And then when you're working, work. But ultimately, I just changed the story that I'm telling myself in my head and just get it done.
Yeah, agreed.
What's one routine that guarantees progress, even in slow seasons?
Showing up, doing the fucking work. Like, that's all it is. Like, honestly, there was another question here about rebuilding momentum, but like progress is stacked, you know, and anytime it's like the analogy of like, if you push a boulder up a hill and you stop pushing a boulder on up a hill, it's going to roll back down to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And that's what business is. It's just continually pushing a boulder up a hill. Mm-hmm. And then once you get to the top of the hill, you get to a new hill. The new hill is even bigger. What you just have to realize here is that there is no like, yes, you can take holidays, you can take off days, you can take weekends off. But like if you take weeks off at a time because you're not motivated, it's going to be very hard to be successful and live the life of your dreams. All right, guys, that's a wrap. So if you love the Q&A format, send us your questions to our Instagrams for the next episode. If you guys are new around here, hit that subscribe button and we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.